Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. You can now access most of my coaching and guidance through my Thrive Sober online video course. This is an easy to follow course containing 50 videos with backed up writing and recommendations that can be worked through in your own time. There is a brilliant app that you can download to access the course on your phone or your tablet. You can skip through the course choosing content you most need in that moment, or you can work through them from 1 to 50 in order. You can come back to the learning or redo sections to help with parts of emotional sobriety that you are struggling with. The course covers holidays, summertime, Christmas, socializing, what to read, identifying and coping with triggers, complacency, the 100-day moderation trap, breaking down old beliefs, managing your thoughts, sugar cravings, and plenty more. You will also get a free copy of my Thrive Sober ebook in the introduction section. Visit www.thrivesobercoaching.com/course to learn more or get access. Use coupon code HALFPRICE to get 50% off. I've had so many messages from people that say the ebook and the course together has been the thing to get them over the line and achieving their first 100 days successfully sober. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Lucy and she's in Chichester in West Sussex and she's been sober for 7.5 months, which is amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. So I am a mum of five children, four grandchildren, very busy. I teach a programme called DDPY, which is a yoga-based fitness. It's an American program built by a retired wrestler, and it's helped to rehab millions of people. It's helped so many people's lives. So that is one of my jobs, and the other is a part-time hairdresser, which is mobile. So, yeah, I'm self-employed, which I love. Also waiting for an ADHD diagnosis. In about a week's time, I'm getting diagnosed. Can't wait. So, yeah, being self-employed kind of works best for me with that.
Yes, I do. I do understand that. And you probably know as well, recently have had my diagnosis as well this last few months. And it's been, it's been quite life-changing, but I would say in a positive way for me. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's only been, I'd say, the last sort of 5 years that it's come to head that I might be. And then the more I've looked into it and researched it and gone, okay, yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah, that's me. And even like the little tiny things, you're like, okay. So it's been a sort of fight like everyone that wants, a diagnosis for the last sort of 2 to 3 years with the doctors. And to finally actually get to where I am feels like, moment, I've still got another week before you actually get the diagnosis, and it won't make any difference to me. I don't particularly want to go down the medication route or anything like that, but it's just that confirming that things that have happened in my life previous have been for a reason and not just because I've been a major mess. It just makes everything make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like it's put things almost into a bit of an order for me. I sort of can look back over my life and it's like relearning again about who I am. Which feels kind of strange after doing that in sobriety anyway, because I do think you have a momentous shift in getting to know who you are when you're sober. It's like doing that all over again, but a different lens. And for me, it's really helped me to have even more compassion, I think, for myself. Look back at my the sort of younger version of myself and think, oh, didn't you do well?
Yeah.
Didn't you do really well?
When you've got like, you'd be at school and you'd have boys getting diagnosed all the time. Like, oh yeah, they're just hyperactive. They've got ADHD. But why the girls weren't being diagnosed yet? They had exactly the same characteristics, is the word I'm trying to say. You know, always being thrown out of class and always being in trouble and, you know, just not being able to sit still and listen and concentrate and read and, you know, exactly the same. Yeah. But because you're a girl,
yeah,
no, you know,
it's been a bit like that in the autistic community as well, I think that.
Yeah.
And I do think that whilst you're right, I presented in this in that kind of way as well. I was always outside of the classroom being quite disruptive. But I have also read quite a lot of books and listened to podcasts where girls learn to internalise quite a lot as well. So they don't always present in that more stereotypical way. And they can maybe have more anxiety or more hyperactive thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, there's a wave of it right now, isn't there? Of people, I think, fortunately, getting their opportunity to get a diagnosis. Not for everyone, sadly, and I wish there were more people trained in this field, and maybe this will open up a lot more opportunities for people to help and to give back and train in this field, because at the moment the waiting lists are crazy and not everyone can afford a private diagnosis. But when you think about, I mean, I didn't even know about ADHD at school. I don't really you know, you had the naughty kids in class, but ADHD is really quite new, I think, for me in terms of hearing about it. But yeah, always was with the stereotypical boy, you know, kind of 8-year-old boy, ADHD. Yep. It's crazy to even think on this podcast that when I started this podcast, I had no thoughts about ADHD at all, wasn't hearing anything about it ever. And early on in the recordings, there would be the odd person pop up that had ADHD, and I'd think, oh, what's this? This is interesting. I just very disconnected from it. For in fact, I think, I don't even know what episode it is, but there is an episode where when it starts to come a bit more on the radar, I'm actually saying on one of my recordings that, you know, maybe I got mild, and I gave myself that mild label, which I know is not politically correct at all, but I gave myself that because I was going online and doing these generic tests, and for some reason they weren't pulling up the results for me. And so there was a disconnect there. And I thought, well, obviously I can't be if I'm not coming up as 10 out of 10 online. Mm. But obviously the testing is a lot more nuanced than those tests online, and it's just crazy. It's just like, even in the sort of evolvement of this show, we've gone from not having any understanding, having a bunch of ADHD, mainly women guests.
Yeah.
Talking about how that relates to their drinking. And then now I've got my own diagnosis, and ADHD is just coming up more and more and more, like on the show, my inbox. It's amazing. It's a good thing, I think.
It is. I think the more people that talk about it and get help, point people in the right direction, the better for everyone.
Yeah, agree. So outside of that, because I could literally spend an hour talking about ADHD, but I will refrain. Outside of that, why don't we talk about your life with alcohol then? I'm sure ADHD is weaved into that quite heavily. But yeah, what did that look like for you?
So a typical age 13, 14, going uptown with your friends, you know, your freedom from high school, all clubbing together to buy a big bottle of White Lightning and downing it, which was, you know, all great, having fun, thinking we were knowing what we were doing. Then it took a turn, you know, a couple of incidents with a few boys that didn't end well, you know, not taking no for an answer, which kind of left me feeling worthless. My self-esteem was hit an all-time low, feeling rubbish. So what do you do? You drink more, smoke weed, just trying to block out what happened and how I felt. So I definitely went off the rails a lot more, started running away from home, probably should have told an adult or, you know, somebody what happened, but you kind of blame yourself and think it's your fault. Then by 16, I felt pregnant. And then by 18, I had two small children. Then by 20, I was married and divorced. So that's when my drinking and use of drugs ramped up. I spent a whole summer drunk on Archers and Lemonade, unable to cope with being a single mum and the breakdown of the marriage. And then by September, I started college, which kind of sort of jolted me back into reality. I was learning hairdressing. I was there 3 days a week, working two jobs, two small children, but also partying hard at the weekends. So I would probably drink most days. We'd go to the pub after college, or a friend would come back to mine. We would drink vodka and cherryade. You know, we'd have pints of it. And if people came round, like my parents would pop round off, you know, just, I didn't expect them. We'd like shove it in a cupboard and hide it. Didn't think, you know, why you're hiding it. You know, you just knew that it was wrong, shouldn't be doing it. And then we'd go out clubbing at the weekends. Kids would either be with my mum or their dad's mum or maybe their dad's. And the house party would always be back at mine. You know, the drinks would be flowing. And then I also, and I think this is an ADHD thing, I would move. Like, I moved house every 2 years. I'd get bored, so I'd move. And I'd have a fresh start in everywhere I went. And I'd make new friends, but new friends to party with and drink with. And again, wine was always an everyday staple. Like, I'd go to the shop for milk or nappies for the kids, and I'd get, oh, two bottles of wine for a fiver. Brilliant, you know. I just didn't think anything of it. It was the way I coped. Then by the age of 29, I had a third child and another broken marriage. Again, the ADHD, relationships, very hard to hold down. But we would drink wine and would party, and then again, find myself single. And I would drink wine like it was water. I also not only had suffered the trauma that I did at 14, but with every baby I had brought severe postnatal depression. And, you know, the first time I was diagnosed at sort of 16, 17, I had no idea what that was. And they give you antidepressants and say, take this. But to me, that was like a headache tablet. Take it and it's all fixed. I didn't realize you had to take it and continually take it. And they didn't follow up. I didn't have any support in that sense. I struggled with suicidal thoughts, hallucinations, and my mental health was like rock bottom. Couldn't hold down jobs. I'd always get bored, move area, change job, look for something interesting that would occupy me and fit around being a single mum. And then fast forward another 10 years, another failed marriage, two more kids. I'd also, from the age of 15, had quite a few abusive relationships that left me in quite a bad way. So drinking was always my crutch. I was always that party girl, the one that was out dancing, drinking everyone under the table, you know, dancing on the tables, or being thrown out, getting into fights, on occasion getting arrested, going off with random strangers and leaving my friends worried where I was. But I didn't see the danger or the harm. So I didn't see alcohol as being a problem at all. I didn't think it was the problem. Mm. I don't know what I thought. I didn't even stop to realize that my life was continuously on fire. You know, I was always battling flames. It was just from a young age how it was.
Yeah. You know? It's just what you get used to though as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
There is comfort in chaos, strangely.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people that haven't had that experience of life that has been quite chaotic, they just don't understand. They don't understand what that feels like, and they don't understand that in a weird way, the environment that's quite unhealthy or the relationships, that there is a familiarity with that as well.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult to see all of that when you're in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, God, it's a lot of crossover, I think, you know, in our lives. And it's interesting, isn't it, with the ADHD as well. It's just the more and more people that I talk to about ADHD, the more I really find stories like mine. Quite a lot of chaos. I when you were talking about the moving, yeah, I really relate to that. You know, I was the same. I was in Leicester until I was 19. and, you know, moved away to North London with a different boyfriend, and then moved to South London, different relationship, different job, then another place in South London, different relationship, different job. And, you know, it's weird, isn't it? That constant resetting. I always think that I, in my life up to when I started to properly, what I feel like is settle down, I have sort of slowed down, I suppose, in the last sort of 10 years. But certainly late teens, 20s and some of 30s, there was just that, like, what felt like constant resetting and new pockets of friends, new relationships, new jobs, just always. It's quite weird to have that history, I think.
Yeah. I think had I just been in Chichester my whole life, probably more people would have maybe pulled me to one side and said, I think your drinking's an issue, or do you know what I mean? But because I was always constantly moving, it was a new start, it was a new this and a new that, and with new friends, there was never that, oh, hang on a minute, do you think maybe you drink too much, or do you think maybe, you know, what's going on in your life for you to constantly want to move jobs, boyfriends, you know, all of that?
Yeah. But it's almost like you can't see the label of the jar that you're in. So it's almost like if that's your life, that's just what you're used to as well, isn't it? It's almost a bit like when I found out about some of the stuff with ADHD and that that was related to ADHD, maybe what we just talked about being an example, there's a part of me that I sometimes think, well, doesn't everyone just do that? isn't that everyone's story? And of course you realise that it's not. It's not everyone's experience of life, and it's not everyone's story.
Yeah.
And even down to the when you were a teenage, you know, the sort of the teenage drinking, sexual consent issues or risky sexual behaviour, abusive relationships, all of that stuff. I can relate to at different levels. And again, it's like when you look back, it's, the penny kind of drops a bit. But it's a shame, isn't it? Because I don't know if you feel this way as well, but almost sometimes, look, I'm so happy I am where I am today, and I'm figuring it all out, and that doesn't matter that I'm in my mid-40s and I'm doing that, at least I'm doing it right. Because there's definitely been people, or there are people, that aren't doing that because they don't have access to the information, they don't know. But I do wonder what it would have been like had I have had that diagnosis and perhaps that support early on, and just that we're more able to give our own children or young people now, which is like, listen, your brain's going to work in this kind of way and you're going to be drawn to this type of stuff and there's nothing wrong with you and that's all okay, but you might just want to be more careful of this, you know what I mean? And just having those pointers, which you and I didn't have. And so the alcohol comes in as that steady source of support and a coping mechanism that helps you get through a lot of that constant disappointment in yourself. I think that's how I felt, just like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just keep my shit together? And, you know, just that, like, something's definitely broken in me feeling that now I feel like, not just on the sober journey, but the sober and ADHD parallel journey, is just kind of very, very freeing. And so I went off on a bit of a tangent there, and I suspect that's not the only time this will happen. But so when did it become a real issue for you? And talk about that period.
So I'd say it's always been an issue. Like, there's always been drama and fires and, you know, the awful things that have happened along the way. But I didn't think, like I said, I didn't think it was a problem. I didn't think it was an issue. I never had people telling me that my drinking was an issue. I never had fallouts with people. Even when, you know, I disappear and friends would be like, oh, you know, ring me the next day, like, I'm so worried about you. And I'm just like, yeah. Or they'd be like, oh, you never guess what you did. I was never like, I'd be like, tell me, as long as I didn't hurt anyone. If I made a fool of myself, it's fine. I don't care. But as long as I didn't hurt anybody, that's, you know, the only thing. So I didn't really recognise that there was a problem until like 5 years ago. I had a friend message me and said, when's a good time? Or when do you point out to your friend that you think they have a drink problem? And I was just like, no, just going through a hard time, another breakup, you know, again, become a single mum again. And then I started to see a friend of mine who he had his own trauma and his own demons. He'd lost his two daughters to heart defects and his wife to breast cancer in the space of like 3 years. So we'd been friends for probably 4 years, but from a distance. At the beginning, he was my DDPY instructor. So he taught the program I now teach and has done for the past 11 years. But at the time, he was married and they hadn't tried for children. And then they went off and did their journey and I went off, you know, my journey. And unfortunately, obviously, his journey ended with losing his whole family. So we reconnected and started hanging out. And I told him that one night I sat with my girlfriends and almost manifested to the universe, like, that I vowed to stay single unless the most amazing man came along. And he must be bald, bearded, tattooed, fit, like fitness, not like football, not smoke, not drink. And this list went on. And it was almost like I was putting a list of the impossible, you know, because I knew it didn't exist. But here he was right in front of me. But again, he was my friend and he'd been my DDPY instructor. He was also married at the time and I was in a relationship. I didn't look at him twice because, one, he was married, and two, he didn't have a beard. He had hair and he wore these awful foot glove things that gave me a massive ick. So, you know, there was nothing, you know. So fast forward to 2019 and we're hanging out, and he, even though everything he'd been through, he didn't turn to drink because he knew it would destroy him. And he's always been a musician, so his other sidekick is a drummer. So he would gig sober and watch drunk people. So he saw what it did to people. But I had always been that person. I would be the person on the dance floor knocking into the band and things. So he then, as we were getting closer, he was watching me continue drink and self-destruct, and he called me out on it. He actually turned around to me. I think I'd been away to Ireland with one of my friends for the week, and he picked me up from the airport, and I stunk of smoke and stunk of drink, and I was, you know, 5 day hangover. And he called me up later and he said, "Why is it okay for you to drink? Like, why is it okay for you to do that when you want someone that doesn't do that?" And I was like, "Oh, wow, that hurt." Like, no one had ever been so brutally honest about my drinking ever. Like, that one friend had commented probably a few months before and I'd been like, nah, and brushed it off. But yeah, it really upset me. And we had like a real heart to heart, but he could see that I had like no self-esteem, no self-worth. Mm. And he said, "I really want to make you love yourself." And I was like, just laughed, like, it's never going to happen. It's never, you know, I've never been that way. So again, he hadn't ever turned to drink throughout losing his whole family. He had chosen fitness, and we both have a love of fitness, but he was more serious than me. And so he threw himself into fitness and he'd made this comment to me. And so I thought, right, I'll go sober. I'll prove I don't have a problem, because I didn't, again, in denial, didn't think I had a problem. So that was 2019. I first went or tried going sober.
Wow. So in your list, because the list was obviously extensive of the, you know, of the perfect person in that, yep, list, did you state then that you didn't want that person to be a drinker or to be into drinking and drugs and that kind of life?
Yeah. I don't think I meant they mustn't drink at all. I think, yeah, I just meant previous to what I previously had, because I felt like people that did drink, it was like fuel to my fire. It was like, well, you're drinking, so I'll drink, you know, but I couldn't just have one or two. I would continue until the bottle's gone and I'll have another bottle, you know? Yeah. So I needed someone that wasn't as chaotic as me.
Yeah. Just wanted somebody maybe a bit more health conscious.
Yeah.
A bit more kind of in control.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it, that he challenged that and that created such a big reaction in you.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder now when you look back on that, how you perceive that.
Yeah, well, he said that he spoke to a friend and said, I don't know if I see a future with this girl because she's just drinking and on self-destruct. And he couldn't have that at that moment in his life because of where he'd been and what he'd been through.
Yeah.
You know, he had any chance of succeeding. I mean, on paper, we look like a logistical nightmare. I've been married 3 times, 5 children, and he had been through the worst trauma anyone could ever imagine. You know, caring for a wife with breast cancer and losing 2 children is just, to put us on paper and go, yeah, they'd make a good match. Anyone would go, absolutely not. He's in the thick of grief and she's a broken mess, you know. But for some reason, we work, you know. So yeah, 5 years later. So, and it's, you know, the journey and the, like you say, you go on this self-discovery when you go sober, and then to get an ADHD diagnosis, it's this whole learning, who am I, like, and like giving your, like, forgiveness and not blaming yourself for the things that have happened.
That's right. And so that 2009, that first stint then, what did that look like? How long was that and what was it like?
Horrible.
That's pre-COVID as well, isn't it? So so it was horrible. Talk to me about that.
It was September 19, and I think I was sober for about 5 months. So I went completely cold turkey again, didn't think I had a problem. So I just stopped, and it was so hard. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to socialise. So together we went out, we ran, we walked, we went on hikes, we hit the gym, we were eating well. I wanted all the sugar and sweets in the world, but all the weight dropped off. My face, you know, before I didn't realise quite how puffy and bloated I was all the time and how bleary my eyes were. And even in the first month, I took a picture of me the day I got back from Ireland. And it actually was my birthday, and I got home and my mum had done a surprise party with all my kids and grandkids here. And, you know, it's the last thing I really wanted because I was so hungover, but I kind of put on this brave face, and there's a picture of me with, I think, with my grandson. And I look the roughest I've ever looked. I look like some haggard old woman. And then a month later, you could just see the change in my face. Like, I'd slimmed down and my eyes were bright, and I was like, wow. I'd never seen that before. So that kind of kept me going. Mm-hmm. And obviously I had quite a bit of weight, and I dropped to below 9 stone, which looking back now was too small for me. But at the time I was like, I feel good. I look good. Mm-hmm. But I still craved the drink and I still craved all I knew. So I couldn't go out. I didn't socialize. I just couldn't see how it could be fun without drink. So I avoided any social events. I didn't want to be tempted by drink. And then 5 months in, my now husband was drumming with his band, and he really wanted me to come and watch. So I put my big girl pants on and went down with my oldest daughter and a couple of friends, and sat for about an hour. But I was so anxious and nervous, and I just, like, I literally felt in my throat like I was going to be sick because everyone around me was drinking and having a good time, and I was just frozen, couldn't enjoy myself. So then I'd been drinking Coke. I decided to go up to the bar and get a double vodka and Coke. And that took the edge off. And then I had another one and another one. And I thought, it's all right, I'll, you know, just stop there. But then I went out and had a cigarette, and that was it, back on it. And after the gig finished, I said to my boyfriend that I'd smoked and that I'd had a couple of drinks. And he was actually really disappointed, not so much in me having a drink, but the smoking, because I had a history of abnormal smears and I'd been warned by the doctors not to smoke. And he'd already lost his wife to cancer.
Yeah.
The one, it kind of, you know, brought up all this, you know, like, triggered him really. But I, you know, we got over that, and I told him that, you know, I had my drinking under control. I could now moderate from that one night. I thought, that's it. I'm fine. I'm sorted. Yeah. I'm healed. And then obviously lockdown hit, and we both began to drink because you all think it's the end of the world and what's going on, and you're seeing all these bodies, and you know, then we started socializing with family and friends, doing the quizzes like everyone and having a drink, and you don't have to go to work, and, you know, that was fine, having fun. But then the world opened up and we started going out, and I wouldn't know when to stop. So I'd get to the point where I was so drunk, he'd either have to carry me out of the pub, or I'd fallen asleep or blacked out, or we'd walk home and I'd sit on the side of the road and just want to fall asleep. And he'd say, I don't know how you got home safe all the time. Like, and you know, worse things didn't happen, but I'd like talk to random strangers or like sit with homeless people, and he'd be trying to get me home. And then like, if I was going out, he'd start to micromanage what I was going to, you know, just say like, what are you going to drink tonight? How much are you going to drink? And I'd be like, for God's sake, you know, I'm not a child. But we talked about it, and he hadn't had therapy for what he'd been through. So he finally went to therapy, an amazing therapist, and he spoke about all his grief and losing all his family. And it turned out that the micromanaging was his fear of losing me, and how he micromanaged his first wife because he was her carer, and he had to make sure she was fed and hydrated and had her medicines to the washing and getting her dressed. And he was really scared that something was going to happen to me.
Yeah.
So quite a few EMDR sessions.
Oh, brilliant.
And it was amazing. It was like, okay, I don't need to control what she's going to drink and how much she's going to drink. So he learned to like, just leave me to it. But again, that wasn't a good thing, because then I was spiraling out of control again. You know, so I wasn't at the point of like back in 2019 where I'd have two bottles of wine a night or a bottle of gin, but it was creeping back in. And then eventually December 23, I think I had two drinks Christmas Day, whereas before I would have been like opening the Baileys first thing in the morning, watching the kids open their presents, pouring Baileys and drinking all day up until the night. And it wasn't that. I think we went to a, you know, we all had a family Christmas, and I had two drinks, and I was like, I had a bottle of Nosecco first, which was lovely. And then I had two glasses of Prosecco, and I went, I actually don't quite like it. I actually prefer the Nosecco. And then on Boxing Day, we go to another family member's, and normally, you know, we really get on it with the red wine. And I think I had one red wine and one Prosecco, and I went, I'm not feeling this. And that was my last drink. My wow. body just, no, I'm done. I'm absolutely done. And it's the weirdest feeling. I kind of went, I think I'm done. And I thought, yeah, that won't last. It'll be like last time you went sober. You know, it'd be like 5 months or something, and I'll be craving it. But that was my last drink. And since then, I haven't craved it. I haven't wanted it. And it's very different to when I went sober in 2019.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk more about that. Before we do, what a lot you and your husband has been yeah. through, honestly. And I wonder if that, you know, maybe that arriving at that place of feeling very done, I wonder how much of that has to do with the disappointment that you may have felt in the, when you think you're fixed and you think you can moderate because you've had a big stint off of drinking,
yeah.
and then you realise that you are not fixed. In actual fact, in a lot of cases, you're worse.
Yeah. I said, like, the amount of times I was like, I should never have gone sober in 2019 because it's ruined me, because I could drink before and now I can't. You know, I can't handle my drink, and that would annoy me because it wouldn't take a lot for me to be in a complete mess.
Yeah.
And I never really thought anything of it. But the last thing your kids and grandkids want is to see me in a mess, you know? And that's what was happening. So, yeah, it had to happen.
I think it's interesting as well, because people that are listening to this, a lot of people, I think, have this long sober curious phase where maybe they have a stint, or they have 10 stints, or they have 20 stints of trying to be sober. And it's so true when they say you can't unlearn what you learn. So even in that, how many, 5 months that you were sober, you had a lot of positives, but emotionally and mentally you weren't in a great place with it because you were really craving it, and you know, there wasn't any other data other than you just lost weight and you looked you know, looked good. And I think that you have to go through that sometimes. I don't know if anybody really ever decides one morning, I'm going to quit drinking, and then that's it. They do it and it's done. I'm sure that happens, but I do, I do wonder how many people do it the way you did it. And like the way I did it, I was the same. I stopped drinking for 8 months and so much was great. When I was 30, I stopped drinking off the back of a messy night out where something went wrong and I got into trouble, and I stopped drinking. And if I'm being honest, it wasn't a strong internal driver. I felt pressure to stop drinking that first time. I felt like if I stopped drinking, I might lose my relationship, or, you know, there was like that external pressure, which I don't think helped me at all. I got 8 months in, which is a really long way. Like, you're 5 months, it's like a solid amount of time. I was at a barbecue and someone went, oh, for God's sake, have a drink. And it was sunny. And I thought, yeah, fuck it, let's go. And that was it. Bang. I was up till 6 a.m. the next morning, you know, straight back in. And I think that I remembered feeling really annoyed, actually. Like, how has that 8 months done nothing for my drinking? Like, I expected to be fixed and I expected to be able to drink better. And it was a bit of a slap in the face that I couldn't do that. And I think, for me, I had to feel that pain quite a bit more of that constant, like, no, I can moderate, and just, you know, slap in the face. No, you can't. You stupid girl. You will never learn how to moderate. And it was just the same as you, just got to that. Yours was less dramatic. Mine was, again, after another big night out, but just woke up in that energy that I was done. And that was that. And just never looked back. It's just interesting, isn't it? And I think the reason why I'm mentioning that overall is to reassure people that you always learn data when you don't drink, even if you're not enjoying it. And if you get time under your belt, and having a few stops and start is okay, because all of that is helping you to unlearn what you've built up in all those years of drinking. And once you see it, like, once you see it, you just can't unsee it. And that's the thing. I think for you, that Prosecco, red wine or whatever around Christmas, it just lost the shine a bit. Just wasn't giving you, I think, the illusion that you had previously bought into.
Yeah.
And so when you made that decision and, you know, you've said, oh, I feel so much better and so much different. Well, what was different? What did you do that was different? Did you change anything up, or was it purely a mindset thing for you?
No, I don't think I did. I was already, so I'd been training. So I'm going to go back a bit. So October 22, I had a mental breakdown. I'd been working for a domestic abuse charity for about 6 months. And that was my passion, because I'd been a domestic abuse survivor myself. I really wanted to help women, and I felt like I was in a really strong place and that I could do that. But the job entailed like being in an office, sitting at a screen Monday to Friday, taking calls, seeing women face to face, you know, helping, sending off referrals, like high risk referrals that were really important. You couldn't make any errors. And for my ADHD brain, looking at a computer and making sure I haven't made any mistakes, just, it was like I was shutting down. And there was so much red tape into how you could help these women. And I felt like I was becoming this empathic vigilante. I just wanted to hunt these men down because they were hurting these women. And there was so much I couldn't do that I wanted to do. And in the end, my brain just shut down and I couldn't even get out of bed. I couldn't get dressed. I couldn't eat. I couldn't do anything. And so I quit my job and I felt like a failure yet again. And I thought, what am I going to do now? And I started doing a bit of dog walking. And then in, I think it was May 23, my husband's boss and his wife came over from America and they were doing a UK tour, this DDPY tour. And I was working the desk. And so I was checking people in, but I really wasn't in a good place. I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want to look at people. But I was watching all these people coming up to my husband and his boss, Dallas, and they were crying and they were thanking them for saving their life and for changing their life. And I couldn't believe that this program I'd done with my husband for, you know, the past 5 years and previous had made such an impact on people's lives. So after the tour finished, we drove home and I said, I think I'm going to become an instructor. But I hadn't said, I'd thought about it before, but I don't know my left from my right. I can't remember things. My memory is shocking. I never thought I could be an instructor. And I thought if I said it out loud, he would hold me to it. So I hadn't said it out loud, but it just came out. And he was like, oh, about fucking time.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, oh, shit. Now I've said it. I'm going to have to follow it through, you know. And so that helped because I had to concentrate on my studying. And my husband, bless him, was like, look, I don't want you to worry or stress about work. I've got you. We will work through this together. I want you to just do what you can do, concentrate on your studying, because I know you'll be awesome at this. Aww. And so I did it. I passed my level one and I said, I want to do women only classes because that is my way of supporting women, empowering women, helping them like build their confidence in fitness and talking to them. My husband does his mixed classes and I do like my one-to-ones with my ladies. And so that really helped, like keeping me focused on something and knowing that the goal is to be able to still help women. So that's given me a focus. So, oh, yeah.
We love that. That's absolutely amazing. Just such an inspirational story. You know, I've never heard of a DPY instructor. I can't wait to Google it, to be honest. I'm just like, you know, I just think it's so interesting. And you know what I really love as well is I love that you get that opportunity. You've created that opportunity to give back to the community that really means a lot to you.
Yeah.
And that must be so healing for you to do that, to help those women in need.
Yeah.
It really touches my heart because I feel very much like that about this show, you know, I'm lucky that it reaches men and women, but obviously I've got my Thrive community, which is women only. And it's just lovely to create a safe space for people to learn and grow and develop and ask questions and to feel heard. I just think, it's very, very rewarding work. And I'm sure you must be amazing at that job. So I'm excited to get all the details at the end. We must make sure that that people know how to find you.
So
for you, your 7.5 months, what's been the challenging stuff for you then this time round?
It's funny you say, so I started off January, well, after Boxing Day, so the 27th December, I decided that I don't do news resolutions, but I thought this year I'm going to challenge myself and I'm going to do something every month that scares me or challenges me. So I started off the year with singing lessons, rock climbing, being a guest on a radio station, walking for charity, life modelling, and going to social events. So I did a Rebel Mums Club with lots of women up in London and did karaoke. So those were like, it was pushing my boundaries. It was doing things while sober and learning that sober life can be fun. So I don't think, compared to 2019 when I went sober, I don't think I found things as challenging because it was more a mindset shift. I was like, I'm going to challenge myself to do all of these good, cool, fun things, and I'm going to work on bettering myself with, I passed my level one, so now what am I going to do? I'm going to do my level two. And now I'm going to do my fast track coaching. So keeping myself busy and studying and constantly learning to better myself were, I suppose because I set myself challenges, it took away facing challenges.
Yeah. Brilliant. Such a creative way to approach it. I love that.
Yeah. And I didn't even intentionally do that to help with staying sober. Mm. I just, because I didn't think, oh, I'm going to go sober again. I just literally went, I'm done.
Yeah. Do you know what I think? This is a lovely opportunity to talk about something positive about ADHD as well, because there is always quite a lot of the downsides I find on social media. It's always like the stuff that's annoying about ADHD. But the real positives, I think, at least for me, because obviously can't talk for you, but is that creativity and that instinct. You just know. It's hard to explain, but I just feel like I know how to help people. I know what people need really quickly. It's almost like, yeah, I see their lives and I can spot it, and I can, yeah, find a really creative way of explaining it to them in a language that they will just understand. And I don't know where that comes from. Well, I didn't know where that came from, but now I appreciate that that is the really creative part of my ADHD brain, is being able to find my own solutions and get creative with things. And that's the bit that I find is the superpower element of, yeah, ADHD, and being able to do a lot of things maybe at once, or, you know, just spinning a lot of plates. Sometimes that leads then into being worn out, and then there's that challenge as well. And you were talking about your breakdown / burnout. I was thinking that sounds so much like burnout,
yeah,
as well. But yeah, I mean, that you just had that kind of creative idea that came to you, not from a book or anything like that. It just came to you, and it's worked really well for you. And I'm really fascinated. What else is on that list? Like, what other things have you got on that list that you want to do? Have you got a list still running?
One, you know, so, you know, this is my challenge for, what month are we in? August. So I've got 4 months left to find things to do. One of them, which still terrifies me, what I did last month was, I actually went to, me and my husband went to America, where the performance center is. So DDPY stands for Diamond Dallas Page Yoga, which is the wrestler, Diamond Dallas Page, and he's the one that started the program. So he has a performance center in Atlanta, and they film for the app. And so I was filmed twice for the app, which is terrifying, but it was one of my challenges. And if someone challenged me, I'm like, I can't say no. So I've had to do all these things. So that was July's challenge. This is August. So what, September, October, November, December, 4 more. One, I don't want to say it, but it's going to have to be singing at an open mic night,
wow,
which is terrifying, but I'm going to do it because why not? You know, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I've got 3 more to find. Yeah.
Have you done cold water swimming or anything like that?
We do it all the time. Every, yes, morning I get out of bed and I have an ice shower. We did have an ice bath, but the cats popped it because it was inflatable. Yeah. So we're looking for a solid one. But yeah, I was on antidepressants for 26 years. And then in February 23, my husband had a mini stroke. And so he was told, you can't lift, you can't run, you can't do anything. And he was on blood thinners for a year. And he was like, what do I do? Because fitness was his way of dealing with his mental health. So he read Wim Hof and he started doing meditation and ice baths. So I did it with him. And I found that after a couple of months, I came off antidepressants for the first time in 26 years. And I've not gone back on them. So it's a religious thing for me. Ice showers, ice baths. We love to sea swim. We did it New Year's Day. So it's my medication is ice showers.
That's so fascinating. I've got the ice bath, the inflatable one. I was always panicking about the cat, I have to say.
Yeah.
But it's harder, isn't it, this time of year, because obviously the air temperature is a lot warmer. But my husband did keep saying, I really want to get the ice bath going, and let's, you know, get, yeah, some ice and let's do that. And he's almost, you know, we're sort of looking forward, because we got into ice baths last autumn when the temperature, yeah, started to drop.
Yeah.
It was amazing how quickly you can get good at it. Whereas, yeah, the other day I went into the sea for the first time in several months, and I couldn't believe how cold it felt. It was awful. I was like, what's wrong with me? I was really expecting me to be able to sort of like glide into this cold sea. And I was just pathetic. I realise that it's a consistency practice thing, isn't it? Much like anything is in life, it's bloody practice. And so I mean, obviously you've had so many gains, but what other things that maybe you haven't mentioned so far have you gained from not drinking and being sober?
What have I gained? I would say learning about people, friends and family that have told me things in the past, and due to ADHD and drinking, I don't think I was really listening. And I think people, you know, probably especially friends on a drunken night out telling you like their life story and you've just not taking it in. And I've found that since being sober, I actually sit and listen. Like I've had girls' nights in, girls' nights out, you know, talking with friends and family where I've actually really sat and listened and taken. And I feel like I've learned things all over again. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. And they're like, yeah, I told you that. I'm like, oh, you feel awful. But, you know, now I kind of know why. I've definitely become a better friend, daughter, mother, nan, partner. I'd say that's probably my biggest gain. And also helping people. I have been really open on Facebook and Instagram about my journey, about stopping drinking, about ADHD, about menopause, about all the things that people don't want to talk about. I'm really like quite vocal about it. And I've had so many people message me, whether they're close friends or friends from a distance, saying thank you so much because actually I've cut down on my drinking, or I've stopped drinking, I'm so many weeks sober now, you know. And I'll constantly post things that I see that I like about sobriety or menopause or ADHD, and I'm constantly, my husband said he's going to nickname me the stories queen because I'm constantly like, my stories are just constant. I have lost a few friends on the way, interestingly, which really hurt and been quite hard, because I always thought if you were to lose friends, it would be in my drinking days when I was being a complete twat, not when I was on my sober journey making a better life for me and my family. But I found it really hard, and then over the last couple of months I've kind of started to understand that not everyone's on the same journey. Friends come and go, and although it's a hard pill to swallow, they say friends come for a season, and actually it's just made way for new ones. And I've made some incredible friends through my sober journey, and again through the DDPY community, because they're just incredible. So those are the gains that I've made. Learning, always learning.
Yeah, passion for learning. I think that's another, for me, it's been another big thing under my ADHD or my neurodivergent umbrella, is I have such an enthusiasm for learning. At the moment, I can't stop reading about intermittent fasting. I'm just like all over it. Love it. The science. It's just so fascinating. But yeah, anything health or psychology or wellness, whole world is just wonderful. Really, really super. There was a comment that you said halfway through. It was actually one from your husband about, you know, wants you to learn to love yourself. And you were very kind of like, that's not me, I don't do that, you know. How do you feel about that stuff now? And now that you're sort of 7.5 months into this journey, has it changed that?
Yeah. I've always struggled with body dysmorphia. I've never liked what I saw in the mirror. And again, drinking, it's like pouring petrol on a fire, isn't it? That's what I was. And I didn't love myself. I don't think I even liked myself back then. And so, yeah, I did laugh at that comment and I thought it was the impossible, but definitely over the last 5 years of learning and self-discovery and then going sober and reevaluating who I am and what I want from life and learning to be a better mother, nanny, friend, daughter, all of those, partner, I like who I am. Yeah, and I think I'm a good person. You know, made mistakes in the past, but haven't we all? We are any human, and so I have forgiven myself for a lot of things, and yeah, I like who I am. And I love who I am, actually. I think I'm a good person because I want to help people. Yeah. So that says a lot, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And what a really lovely place to be as well, when you can say that genuinely and really mean it, that, you know, I like who I am, or I love, or I appreciate who I am. Because I was the same as you. And again, I think that a lot of this comes from the ADHD brain, and there is some mad statistic which apparently ADHD kids receive something like 20,000 more criticisms by the time they're 18 or something like, I can't remember exactly what the age is, you know, more than neurotypical kids. And then you think, God, no wonder you grow up with that really low sense of self-worth and like you're not good enough and not worthy. Yeah. And all the things, and then you add the drinking on top and the constant barrage of mistakes and the constant disappointments, and then you kind of are a bit in tatters. I think that's how I felt, like I was sort of starting my 40s with my self-esteem and self-worth just like on the floor, in tatters, another relationship broken down, single parent, two kids, what is going on, what have I done, kind of thing. And then not drinking, and you know, all the other things that have come along with that, and the ADHD as well now for me, is just like complete transformation of how I feel about myself. And and in actual fact, my husband would say, I never met anyone that backs himself as much as you. He finds it quite off-putting sometimes. He's like he's like, for God's sake, like, how do you end up being so? And I think to myself, I always say, do you know what, I spent all my life not being like this, and I'm not doing that again, you know. It's enough. I you know, I really value myself now, and I don't need anyone to tell me that I'm all right. I know I'm okay, and I know I'm good. It's a great feeling, right? It's who would have thought, you just stop drinking and oh my God, just get rid of this. Those things.
Yeah. I had a moment back in April. It was my oldest daughter turned 25, so she had like a party. And obviously I'm not drinking. And it had only been 4 months, and one of her friends walked in, and he was all like, "Hey, you know, get the drinks," and got everyone drinks, and got everyone a Jaeger bomb, which was my go-to. I loved a Jaeger bomb. I'd be carrying a tray full of them, you know, 2 a.m., like out to everyone, getting everyone shots, and he wrapped them all up on the thing, and he looked at me and he said, "Drink," and I was like, "No, I don't drink. I had like a Peroni Zero or something," and he was like, "Well, that's not a drink. You've got to have a drink. It's your daughter's birthday." And I said, "I don't drink." And he said, "Why?" You know, and he was really pushing me to drink. And I said, "If I was to drink, it would have been a Jaeger bomb because that was my drink." So he put one in front of me, and I just looked at him and I put it back and I said, "I'm not drinking." He went, "Whoa, why are you going to have a drink?" "Because I care about myself." He said, "Well, so do I." And he was training for a boxing thing at the time. And I said, "I'm really into my fitness." He went, "Well, so am I." And I said, "Yeah, but I actually like to see the games, you know." Yeah. And I, "How old are you?" And he went, 25. And I went, "I've been in this drinking game a lot longer than you, mate. And, you know, I'm out, I'm done." And he was like, "Fair play." But you could see, and it's the first time I'd come up against someone that was really pushing me to drink. And it really pissed me off. But I was really proud of myself, how I dealt with it.
I
thought, this daughter's birthday, I could have been pressured into, you know, getting drunk with them all and having a dance with them all, but no. So yeah, I'm quite glad that I had that, because it's the first time I've had it. I didn't even have it the first time around. So yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, isn't it? People are, you know. I also find that nowadays a lot of people don't drink, and a lot of people are like, "Oh no, I'm sober," and you know, they're having the zeros, and there's so much better choice of the zeros now. The zero gin is lovely. So
yeah, it's really changed. I was talking about this yesterday, actually, on a different podcast recording, about how much the landscape has changed, even in 5 years since I've been sober. Explosion of drinks, but not only the explosion of alcohol-free drinks, but the explosion of people that are just not drinking, that are choosing to be healthy. And it's amazing. And yeah, I know what you mean. I've had a few of those little run-ins with people socially as well, and obviously it's all about their relationship with drinking and nothing to do with me, but I know that now, at the time, they do catch you off guard, those sorts of exchanges. And some people can be really pushy, and then you get it followed up with, "Oh, what do you do for fun? I mean, where's the fun in life?" And you know, I think now if I was to come across that, I would be probably bordering, well, I definitely would be quite blunt back about, yeah, like, well, you know, to be honest, I just don't feel like I need to drink to have fun. But, you know, yeah, you know, I wouldn't expect you to understand that. But maybe a few years ago, I wasn't as bolshy as that. And I would buckle a little bit in those situations and just maybe even laugh them off and then walk away just feeling really frustrated. Like, you should have done a better job, Terry, of that situation. But they do, yeah, sometimes just catch you off guard, I think. They do. They can just surprise you. But it sounds like you nailed that, to be honest. So,
yeah,
you were really good. But, oh, this is such an amazing chat. I really, really enjoyed this. What would you say are your top three tips on getting and staying successfully sober?
So, number one, so I'm just going to plug my phone in because it's going to die.
Yeah, go for it.
Number one, I would say surround yourself with the right people, not ones that are going to berate and take the piss and not support you. So you're going to lose friends. So that's definite, surrounding yourself with the right people. Secondly, I would say ice baths every day. We've covered that, but ice shower, sea swim for your mental health, exercising every day and eat well, definitely the right foods because that makes you feel good. And then thirdly, I'd say learning that it's a journey of self-discovery, feel into the feelings that it's okay. Allow yourself to sit in the uncomfortable, cry and scream and struggle because it does get better. Nothing is worse than being drunk, and drinking the poison leads to so many cancers. And being unavailable to people, like being sober and being able to go and pick your kids up or be there when they call you and be there for your friends and family, it's so much better. And sober life is much more fun.
Yeah. 100%. It is where the fun is at.
Yeah.
It's difficult to see that in the beginning, I think, because the social conditioning is so strong that,
yeah,
it's the opposite. But once you actually just start tiptoeing in the water and then have the freedom to go alone, mm, and, you know, go your own way and start to go on this journey of self-discovery, then, yeah. And if your mind's in the right place, right, that's the difference for you. Like the first, yeah, time round, your mind probably wasn't in open, yeah, to it, really. And yeah, whereas this time it's like more lifestyle choice, isn't it? Mm. Like, I want this lifestyle and I want these benefits. And
yeah, I think you definitely have to be ready because it's no good doing it for someone else because it's just not going to work.
No.
And you're not going to crawl into it. You're just going to struggle at the first hurdle and go, oh, just have a drink.
Yeah,
there was back in May, I had a really bad day. I had a court in the morning for something, and then I'd gone to the gym to let off some steam, and I blew my back out, and then I'd been to see my granddaughters, and I was driving back and I got caught speeding, and all these things. I was just like, oh my god, like the worst day ever. And I was teaching a one-to-one client the next day, and I was telling her about it, and she said, but you know what you didn't do? And I said, what? She went, you didn't drink. And I went, I didn't even think about it. It didn't even come into my brain. And I went, oh, yeah. Because before, I would have had a drink.
Yeah.
And when we went to America recently, my telly wasn't working and everyone else was sat there, you know, looking at their little movies, ready for a 10-hour flight. And I was like, getting really frustrated. And I said to my husband, back in the day, I would have been 3 double vodkas in by now, you know, so that I knew I could sleep and that. And I said, it doesn't even come into my peripheral, you know.
Yeah,
you just breathe, take a minute, it's fine.
yeah, that's it. You know, annoying things are gonna happen, right?
Yeah,
all the time, and they're usually gonna happen on a day when you really don't want them to.
Yeah.
But it is about having that pause and reset and that perspective, isn't it, that actually, yeah, this is okay. I yeah, will survive this thing.
Yeah,
it's an annoyance, but
yeah,
it's not going to last forever. And even if it just lasts for the day, I can breathe, I can go and walk, I can listen to my favorite music, I can,
yeah,
even go and have a cheat meal or a chocolate bar or just anything, yeah, to just distract. And it will, you know, tomorrow is a new day, or even tonight is a, you know, few hours later, and it will be better. And I think, yeah, that's That's a big lesson I think you learn on the journey.
Yeah.
So because of we're so used to that instant gratification of, oh, something's gone wrong, drink. Something feels uncomfortable, drink.
Yeah.
I've had a really bad day, drink. And you know, we don't connect with the ups and downs. We just search for the constant ups. And that is unrealistic. You cannot be happy in life if that's what you're always chasing.
No.
So yeah. Amazing. What a great way to end. Before you go, though, we must check out how we can access you and find all your fab stuff. So, yeah, please tell us where we can find you.
So my Instagram is hollywaldenrose_.
Holly.
Walden Rose.
So that's Holly. W-A-L-D-E-N?
Yeah, W-A-L-D-E-N, Rose_.
Underscore, yeah.
Yeah. And on Facebook, I am, again, Holly Rose Walden.
Okay, so same on Facebook. And in terms of being able to get in touch with you and work with you, how would people do that?
They can either message me, they can drop us a message on our Facebook is Jigsaw Fitness. Let me just double check it again.
Fitness, yeah.
Yeah, let me... Actually, where am I? Let me go to, there we go. On Instagram, we are jigsaw.fitness.
Jigsaw.fitness.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Awesome. Oh, thank you so much.
Brilliant. You're welcome.
And all the very best with it all. And yeah, you're not far off the year soon. That will come by really quick, actually.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. 4 months away.
Mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, I hope you have a really lovely rest of the summer and all the very best. Really, really good chat.
Thank you for having me.
Huge well done to you. Done amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And thank you to everyone else. Bye.
I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections like the main Thrive community feed where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are 5 events. There are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section. And then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well. And in the knowledge hub, you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days. So if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program. There's a toolkit. There's understanding the brain science and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.